Minnesota Public Radio's Main Street Radio is supported by a major grant from the Blandon Foundation, strengthening rural Minnesota communities through grant making, leadership training, and conferences. We're coming to you live today from the State Correctional Facility. We're sitting at the edge of the school auditorium where everyone's been getting ready for Sauk Center's 60th annual holiday tea. This room is all decked out with garlands and candles, and two Christmas trees flank the stage up at the front. At 1 o'clock today, students and staff and guests from the community will come in and they'll be served coffee and tea and cookies by students who will be wearing red vests to be waiters and waitresses. The teenagers who are held here at Sauk Center are here for a variety of reasons. All of them have committed felonies, but most of them have committed nonviolent crimes. In fact, the vast majority of kids who go through Minnesota's courts have committed nonviolent offenses, such as running away or stealing. Most only wind up in court once or twice, and then they straighten out. But a handful of kids do commit serious, violent crimes, assault, rape, even murder. And some kids come back to court again and again. Juveniles who commit crimes tend to come from difficult backgrounds. They're far more likely to have been victims of physical or sexual abuse. In just a few minutes, we'll be talking with a panel of people who work with juveniles and a state lawmaker, and we'll be taking your questions about juvenile justice over the telephone. But first, we wanted to hear from some of the teens themselves. Main Street Radio's Rachel Reby is here with three of Sauk Center's residents. Rachel?
Thank you, Catherine. Our guests today, 16-year-old Pat, 17-year-old Pete, and 15-year-old Wendy, they are all here at the correctional facility at Sauk Center. Some of them are getting out soon, some of them are not getting out so soon, and some have been here for longer than others. We want to talk to you guys because we want to hear what the juvenile justice system looks like from the inside. Wendy, let's start out. Tell me where you've been besides Sauk Center. What other places like this have you experienced in the juvenile justice system?
St. Croix. I've been in Wilson Center. Buckeye. Lots of places.
Been in foster homes?
Foster homes.
Lockups?
Yeah.
Regional juvenile detention centers?
Yeah.
So you've seen all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
What's your assessment of the system? Does it work, Wendy? Do some places work better than others? What do you think works for rehabilitating kids in trouble?
Some places work better than others because you can talk to people. You just don't sit there and rot. Other places, you just sit there and do your time, get out and do the same stuff.
And that's what happened to you?
Mm-hmm.
Pete, what would you say is wrong with the system? What's the one thing that if you could change anything, what would you do?
Probably cell time.
Explain that to us. What does that mean?
I feel that being locked up in a cell doesn't give you a lot of time to rehabilitate. You need to get out, work with the group, and get help for your problems. When you're sitting someplace doing time, you don't get the help.
Pat, what would you say to that? You agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think people should be locked down in those cells.
Just kids or
for
anybody?
For a long amount of time. I mean, just chill out time. You know, not for a month or 60 days or more than that.
It's too long. It's not helpful.
Not really.
Pat, you're 16 years old. How old were you when you first got in trouble with the law?
11, 12.
And what sorts of things?
Mainly stealing and possession of firearms. I had a couple 12 gauges. And I'm running away all the time, too. So that's what got me back. And when I get caught, I get caught for another offense. So I just dig myself deeper.
This is your second visit to Sauk Center.
Third.
Why'd you come back here? Don't you get out of here and think, I will never be back in this place?
I really don't think about it.
You just get sent back here?
Yeah.
You're getting out on Thursday. What's going to change about your life? Is this your last time in Sauk Center?
I do my best to make it my last time.
What do you do to make it your last time?
Stop getting in trouble.
Did something happen here that's going to make that easier for you? Did you learn something, or did you, see the light, or did you turn over a new leaf, or what happened that's going to change the pattern in your life?
Set goals for myself to do things. Like, need a job, not to steal nothing.
So when you get out on Thursday, you're looking for a job?
Yeah.
Pete, how would you answer that? What's happening in here that's going, you know, what changes? What's going to change for you?
I don't know.
Well, if you were running this system and you were the superintendent here instead of Mr. Ulrich, what kind of program would you have for kids that would ensure them that there was something would happen, that they would change?
I don't know. I think this program works pretty good. I mean, this program is a PPC program.
Which means what?
Positive peer culture.
Which means what?
And everybody works together. You help people with their problems. You just get more help. You're not sitting just doing time. You're getting help for what your problems and what your offenses are.
Wendy, what do you think about the system? What do you think needs to change about it? You first got in trouble at age 12, spent 3 years in these variety of places. You told me you're going to spend your first Christmas away from home. What needs to change about the system? How do we treat juveniles that isn't wrong or isn't right, or what should we be doing?
I don't know. You shouldn't have, like, long-term placements. Like, I don't know, just have them for a couple months and let them see their family more. I don't know.
You said that, Pat, that they need to let you go home more. Why? Because the longer you get away, it's hard to go back then?
Well, I guess you just forget about things. You don't think about it. Then, like, if you're locked up for a long time and you just forget about home, then get too into the program. Then it doesn't bother you to get locked up.
Do you guys feel like you've almost been raised by an institution? I mean, you're still all at the age where we think you should be home. You should be home with mom and dad, the dog, the station wagon. Do you think it's tough to grow up, essentially, to be parented in an institution?
I think it's hard. Like, you don't really get into the real world. Just facilities are different than the way you live naturally on the streets, I guess.
Pete, how would you answer that?
I agree with what Pat said. Facilities are a lot different than the way we live at home. I mean, you said both the mom and dad, well, society today, there's a lot of one parent people. You're growing up with one parent. I mean, if they're working, there's not a lot of people there to watch over you. I mean,
Sauk Center, this facility, is considered to be the end of the road for juveniles in trouble. This is like last stop. Is it as bad as you thought it would be, Wendy? You were in all these different places and finally came to Sauk Center. Was it what you expected, or is it totally different than we would think of it?
It's totally different.
What ways?
Like, I don't know, I was told it's really hard and you gotta sit in a cell and get beat up and everything. It's not like that at all.
They try to make it as home-like as possible. You don't live in cells, you live in cottages. You're in smaller groups, you're not like in a huge ward with beds all lined up. Does that make it any better? Does it seem home-like, or is there nothing like home about this place?
I guess it's kind of like a big home.
It's kind of like a big home. Our system of juvenile justice says that when you turn 18, for the most part, if you don't get in trouble again, you start over again. So Pete, in a year when you got, you can start over again. You don't, you won't have a criminal record that's gonna follow you into adulthood. Is that enough to make you think, I'm not gonna do it again? Because I know if I do, I'm not going back to Sauk Center. This time I'm going to?
Big House.
The Big House, is that St. Cloud for you guys?
Yeah.
Is that enough to keep you on the straight and narrow, do you think? Do you think about that? Like, boy, I'm out of here for good this time.
Yeah, I suppose the time would scare you a little.
I really don't really think about it. Try to take day by day. I think what's going to keep me out is me wanting to be out. It's not going to be I'm scared of going there. It's me wanting to stay out.
And can you picture your life being out and never coming back?
I can picture it. I don't know. I can't tell the future, so I don't know if that's going to come out to what I want it to be.
Wendy, when we talked, you said it was a series of bad decisions, kind of one bad decision after another, and a group of friends that really weren't all that helpful. Are you learning something here that's going to change that when you get out?
Kind of, not really.
So what will it be that keeps you out?
I don't know, thinking of my mom.
Okay, great. I want to thank the three of you for coming on and have you respond to some questions when we get those. Back to you, Catherine.
Thank you, Rachel. You're listening to a live Main Street radio broadcast from the Minnesota Correctional Facility at Sauk Center. We're here in the high school auditorium where people are starting to assemble for the 60th annual holiday tea. They're sitting at candlelit tables waiting for the cookies and the coffee to start to arrive at about 1 o'clock today. The officials here at Sauk Center have invited local dignitaries and politicians and former staff members, a number of guests, and the students here will be serving them this afternoon in a sort of a charming tradition. Joining us today on our broadcast are three people who are well acquainted with Minnesota's juvenile justice system and the state laws regarding juveniles. Larry Smith is the program director here at Sauk Center. Tom Van Engen is an independent Republican lawmaker from Spicer who sits on the House Judiciary Committee and has also been a social worker in community corrections. And Freddie Davis supervises a probation and parole unit for Hennepin County. Ms. Davis chairs the Female Offender Task Force for the state, and she also sat on the Supreme Court Task Force on Juvenile Justice. Before we go to the phones, I wanted to talk with Larry Smith to start with, the program director here at Sauk Center, and ask you, Mr. Smith, if you can describe the program here a bit and tell us what sort of kids come here and what happens to them once they get here.
Well, we serve the western half of the state, 66 counties for males, and we take in all counties for Minnesota for adolescent females. The majority of our population is made up of residents who are committed to us. We also take in some detention cases as well as do some evaluation.
What sort of things would get a kid sent here?
Well, they have to be adjudicated delinquent by the courts, which says in most cases they have committed a felony level offense. Within that, they have previously been programmed for within the community.
Meaning they've been in other treatment
centers,
been
in other treatment facilities,
homes.
Other facility group homes, treatment throughout the state, depending on what's available in their counties.
And then once they come here, they go to school. What else? Are there counseling programs?
Everybody comes through our security cottage for their first day, and we classify them depending on their age, depending on size, depending on what their personal needs are. And we come up with, place them into to groups. We presently have 9 groups on grounds. We have 5 open cottages and 1 security cottage. We try to program for kids in groups of 9 or 10. However, because the populations have risen lately, we've seen these groups rise to as high as 15.
You tend to be full, don't you? Even crowded.
Business is very good.
Tom Van Engen is a lawmaker from Spicer who is on the House Judiciary Committee and was on the committee last session when some new laws regarding juvenile justice were passed. And we wanted to talk with you about that. One of the reasons we wanted to do this program is to talk about what those laws will do, how things will change for juveniles in the future. What's the upshot of the new legislation?
Well, thanks for having me here, Catherine. It was an interesting year to be on the Judiciary Committee with all of this changing. There's several parts to the new juvenile law. One of those is to try to make sure that Larry doesn't get too overcrowded in this situation. So there will be some funding for secure juvenile facilities. We want to make sure that we can try to provide the kinds of things that Pat and Wendy and Pete were talking about so that we have someone to work with kids, make sure that we can get these things taken care of before they need to come here. Earlier, Larry was saying that it'd be good to work him out of a job so we don't need this. I think that overall, we'd like to make sure the system tries to do more of that, try to beef up the system at the other end, not because we don't need Larry and the work that they do here, but because we'd like to not need them as much. So there are several parts to that. We want to, part of that is to make sure that juveniles know that we're serious about the crime. We want to make sure that we can prevent it before the crimes happen. You can't always do that, but that's why we need to make sure that people know how serious we are about it. That's the reasoning behind the new part of the law called extended jurisdiction juveniles, so that juveniles can actually get an adult sentence, but it stayed on the condition that they follow the programming and the other conditions that are set up for them.
And the reason for that is because the way the system works now, if you're 16 or 17 when you commit a crime, unless you're certified as an adult when you turn 18, that's it. You're free, right?
That's right. There's also some provisions to make sure that we do certify people as adults for certain kinds of offenses. And especially, I think one of our panelists said something about having a weapon. And those are the kinds of things that we're going to make sure that people know at every age. If you use a weapon in a crime, that ups the ante automatically, and that's going to make it a lot easier to certify juveniles as adults. And in fact, we've just about reversed the proof so that you have to prove that you need to be, for some reason, tried as a juvenile rather than almost automatically going into the adult system for using a weapon.
I'm going to interrupt you because when I said children are set free or juveniles are set free at 18, both Freddie Davis and Larry Smith shook their heads. Freddie Davis, why is that?
Well, if a young person is committed to the Commission of Corrections, they are on parole until their 19th birthday. So
okay.
That was what we were speaking of. One of the things that does happen if a young person commits an offense after when they're 18, then they're an adult. But if they're in the system prior to that, they're in there until 19, if they're committed to the commission.
So if you committed a crime at 17, say, and had to wait to go to court and then had to wait for a placement, you could conceivably end up with quite a short placement because of turning 19 then?
And, yes.
Yeah, okay. And we do have a couple of people who are patiently waiting to get their questions through, so let's go to the telephones. Hi, what's your comment or question?
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, hi. I am a children's advocate, and I work with youth that come from single-parent families. And I think often we don't ask the youth what they think. And I want to know from the three panelists what things or what they feel is missing or what I can offer youth to help them try to stay out of trouble.
Do you mean as a community member?
As an advocate, as a community member. Is it programs? Is it someone to talk to? Is it what things are missing or they feel that could have been in their life that would have helped them stay out of trouble?
Pat, do you want to take a shot at that one?
I think you can help people think about goals to set for themselves so they know what they want in life.
Pete, did you have something you wanted to put in? What about programs like midnight basketball, that sort of thing? Is that going to help keep kids out of trouble?
It helps people get along with time, I mean. But if people are doing crimes, I mean, I don't know. Just like Pat said, talk to people, somebody to talk to, somebody to help you set goals for your life.
So to have an important adult in your life who can help you set goals and work with that sort of thing with you.
Yeah.
Wendy, do you agree with that? Or would you think that there's something more that we as adults, not just in the correction system, but in the community, should be doing to try to help kids?
For me, it's just someone to trust that I can talk to.
Do you feel like you don't have that now?
Yeah.
So if you had a good adult friend who could help you decide, you know, help you make decisions about your life, that would make a difference?
Yeah.
How would that make a difference?
I don't know. Just influence me. Help me.
For all three of you, you know a lot of kids who are in the same position as you are, right? Do you find that most of them don't have an adult they can confide in and who they can work with?
Majority of people have, I don't know, poor family life, I guess. Like, parents are separated or something.
I see all three of you nodding your heads. Okay, well, let's go back to our telephone lines for the next caller. Hello, go ahead with your question or comment. Is the caller there? Looks like we may have lost this one. Should we try the next one? Is there a caller on the line waiting? Well, let's wait and see if they call back then, or for us to put together whatever technical issues we need to.
What's that?
Oh, the caller is there. Hello.
Yeah.
Hi. What's your question?
Question, I wanted to find out why these children or kids are allowed to go out in on the pontoons, go fishing, take trips to the Dairy Queen, as well as the movies, the movie theaters in the local town.
That's certainly a question I've heard in the interviewing I've done on this topic all this week, is that some people feel like our programs for juveniles are too lenient. We offer them, programs like Thistledew where they can canoe and ski. And I'm not sure which of our panelists would like to take that one. Larry Smith from Sauk Center?
I think there's a part about working with juveniles is you have to realize that we're working with kids. We have a responsibility to work them back out into our communities, not just to detain them places. And part of that says that they have to interact with communities. And it's important for them to learn how to have a good time without thinking delinquently. It's important for them to have opportunities. I think one of the key things that parents today, effective parents, do is they expose their children to as much as what they can in the world. It makes them more ready to interact effectively. And I think we have to look at this, and we have to look at, when we're working with kids, what opportunities we offer them, not just how we can contain them.
Freddie Davis, do you agree with that? I know that after I went up to Thistledew, I had a couple of friends say to me, they spend $10,000 on a kid to go to Thistledew, but a good kid who didn't get into trouble doesn't get anything.
Well, I can certainly see the concern of a person saying that a person's sent away for punishment, and that they're being treated with all the goodies. But if you take a look at it, again, as I asked the question earlier, what's our goal in corrections and treatment? And you look at what is going to change a person. That tends to be a person that feels some self-worth. If you're going to put a person away, punish them, tell them they deserve nothing, treat them unlike a normal human being, what are you going to get? So I think that's the question we have to ask ourselves when we're when children and or adults are sent away, and the question is to why are they getting these goodies? What is it we want to come back to our communities? Do we want to have an animal come back, or do we want to have a whole human being that's coming back and going to be a participating, productive citizen and a member of the community? And I don't think you'll get that by sending people away, just locking them away and throwing away the key.
I've been really interested in talking with both kids and adults about this subject. It seems to me that more often than not, the kids think that juvenile offenders should have tougher sentences. And I wonder if our young panelists think that too. Do you think, Pat, do you think you got off too easy at first?
Not really.
You think you had it? Your punishment was severe enough for what you had done?
Well, I guess.
But it didn't make you not do it again, huh?
I guess not.
How about you, Pete? What do you think?
I feel I got what I deserved. I mean, I did the crime. I have to come to places like this, get help, so I don't go back out there and do the same crimes I did before.
Do you think sentences for kids are tough enough? No opinion? How about you, Wendy? Do you?
In certain cases, yeah. In others, I think they either get, not enough time or too much time.
It does seem as though the studies would indicate that it's not necessarily the severity of the punishment, but how quickly it happens, isn't it? I wonder if Tom Van Engen, what can the state do to try to set things up so that kids don't wait for a month to go to trial and then wait a month or longer to get put in a placement?
Well, I think there's a series of things, Catherine. One of them will certainly involve funding making sure that we have adequate funding for the court system, for defense and prosecuting attorneys and all of those things. I think that part of what we have to do is look at all of this a little bit differently. I'm not an expert, but I have learned a little bit about a concept called restorative justice, and I think that I hope to learn more about it and see about applying some of the principles. Especially what we need to do is make sure that the victims of crimes are part of the system instead of we base our entire legal system on the idea that the state is the one that these young people have committed a crime against. But there probably are victims out there somewhere, not just the state. And so, not that the whole idea is wrong, but we have to kind of turn that around so that victims have a part in this and that their rights are protected as well. I sympathize with the caller, but I know that there has to be a balance. We don't want to treat these young people. I hope Pat has a good attitude when he gets out next week so that he won't be as motivated to continue the crimes that he's done before. There has to be that balance between helping him learn what to do positively with his life and understanding that what he's done in the past, he has to stop. That's a pretty delicate balance, as I'm sure the staff here would be able to tell us more about.
We have a lot of people on the phone waiting to give us their questions and their comments. Hi, where are you calling from? Hello, is the caller there?
Me?
You, yes, you're up.
Okay, I'm from La Crosse, Wisconsin.
Thanks for calling.
excuse me, I have a cold.
I think we all do.
I would just like to say that the Lord is with you all, and I may have not been through as much as you have, but I have been down my walk as a teen and taking maybe the wrong path at certain steps in my life. But I know that through Bible study and through just a personal relationship with Jesus, I have been delivered from a lot of that. And I know that each one of us has to take that step on our own. But I do know that the churches are really not out there, you know, helping how they could. But I guess it was, you know, through word of mouth, somebody who helped me, and just studying the scriptures. And I guess I'm curious to find out, you know, how much involvement the people on the panel have had with the Bible and being exposed to studying it, not in a large group, but more in a one-on-one, and that nobody's telling you what you need, but you're getting what you need from it.
Okay. Larry Smith, let me ask you, are there religious programs for the kids here at Sauk Center, or is that something the state can't do?
No, there is religious programming. We do have a chaplain on staff. One of the key parts of when kids come in to the state facility is that our chaplain does contact their home community. Part of what, when we talk about other places, we talk about how do you reintegrate kids back in the community? And you try to start that right from the very beginning to understand what connections they have in their community. So we do try to contact their churches and try to keep people in contact with them. One of the statements made by one of our residents earlier said that once they're here, it's easy to start forgetting about where they came from, forgetting about home the longer you're away from home. So it's important for us to try to keep them involved with their home community. It's also important for their home community to stay involved with them, because because they have the biggest share to gain from that, because we talk about our youth as our resources for the future. So, and part of this is to return the young people that are here back to the community so they can be productive resources. And so in order to do that, we try to keep their home communities involved. And churches are a very good way. Earlier people asked how they could be involved or how they could help. It really is a very key part of how to help kids today is they need a healthy relationship with an adult. As much as you can, if you have time, places, it's important that they be able to have adults that they can trust. People who are willing to stay with them, to listen to them. I think anybody who's gone through adolescence, the reason people don't want to become a teenager again is, who do you trust, you know? Who are you? Where are you? And there are questions that have to be asked, answered. And I don't think anybody today has all the answers. But you have to allow kids to ask the questions.
Okay. You're listening to a live Main Street Radio broadcast from the State Correctional Facility at Sauk Center. We're broadcasting from a little corner of the auditorium, which has slowly filled with people who are here for the 60th annual holiday tea. And it's really quite a lovely sight. There are candles throughout the room, Christmas trees and holly and garlands, and quite a few people have come in for this annual tradition. Let's go to our next caller. Hi, where are you calling from?
Hi, I'm calling from Minneapolis. Can you hear me?
Yes, we sure can.
Oh, the last time you couldn't, so I'm glad you can.
Oh, well, I am too.
First of all, I want to wish a Merry Christmas to the young people there, and I hope that when you do leave and go back to the community that you will find those adults there for you that will help you get through this tough time in your life. And that was the original question was to ask if that was important. They've already addressed that. But that my question then is to the, I guess particularly to the representative. One of the things that I've seen as a registered nurse in mental health is that as institutions were emptied out and people were supposed to go in the community and integrate into community life, that the resources didn't appear to help make that happen. And it seems as though we're developing the same problem in corrections, adult corrections that they're talking about now, but that the funding for prisons, by and large, comes from the state, and the funding for keeping track of people and helping them when they come back into the community comes from the county. And what can we do to work cooperatively between the state and the county to make sure that we're just not simply cross-shifting out of the system, but that we're actually truly trying to make the system work better.
Tom Van Engen, that is a complaint I've heard from many county officials that under the guise of trying to treat people in the community, what the state is really doing is shoving its problems off on the counties. And some of those counties' tax burden on their residents just to pay for those services is really becoming oppressive.
Yeah, I represent part of Candiota County, and just talked with some of the officials there. The costs are really very high. Part of what we can do is we can make sure that the state doesn't intentionally shift those things, send along the unfunded mandates. We need to, as a society, decide what we'll do and then kind of share that cost for what it is that's important for us to do. That's a matter of setting priorities and not shifting the responsibility and especially the costs along. One of the things that this caller can and should do is what many of my constituents have done, and that's make sure that your legislators know exactly what it is that you want. We represent people, certainly we have our own opinions and we have to use our own abilities and insights to make legislation, but we must hear from people about what they want. I think that what we're hearing a lot of is we want to make sure that we address this problem of crime, and as we've said here, as the panelists have said in our discussions before we went on the air, partly what we need to do is make sure that we address the problem sensibly. We need to look at preventing people from getting too far along in the system. That's going to take some money, and I think that the public needs to let us know if they want to spend money on prisons. I prefer that we make sure we can spend an adequate amount of money on probation officers and some of the earlier steps. I think we need to get tough on crime at the beginning so that people don't continue along that path. It's going to take a lot of money, and it's going to be a tricky process to set our priorities straight and get the funding. Everybody wants more funding, and there's not an unlimited amount of money to go around.
Freddie Davis, is Hennepin County finding itself pretty strapped for funding? One reason I ask is because many people that I've talked with have suggested that what's really needed is more funding for prevention on the outset, even as early as maybe prenatal prevention programs, but that there's when the cuts get made, that's where they get made. Is that a problem for you?
Yes, that is a problem in Hennepin County. Right now, we are trying to look at the service continuum for juveniles. And we are working together with social service to find out where can we cut and where best to cut. That's a very arduous process because if you cut one place, you seem to leave out another set of people who have a need for service. One of the things we are looking at is, again, how can we put more money back into the community so that it will not only help those before they get into the system, but help those at the front end of the system, and as well provide services to those reintegrating back into the community. tricky process, but that's what we're attempting to do with shorter dollars and more customers.
Very quickly, before we go back to the telephone, I just wanted to ask our younger panelists, that caller wished you all a Merry Christmas, and I wonder if any of you is going home for Christmas. Pat, I guess you will be, huh?
Yeah.
How about you, Peter? Are you going to be here or are you going home?
I'm going to my aunt's house, so I'll be gone.
And Wendy?
I'll be here.
You'll be here? Have you spent other Christmases in institutions like this one?
No.
This will be the first one?
Yeah.
So what do you think about that?
I don't know. It just doesn't feel like Christmas.
Even with all the work gone to make a Christmas tea, and apparently there'll be some sort of ceremony, won't there, on Christmas Day?
I guess so. I don't know much about that, but I know they try to make it feel like home or whatever, but it just doesn't.
What kind of Christmas do you wish you were having?
At home. My brothers and sisters and my mom.
Has either of you, Pat or Pete, ever had to spend Christmas in one of these institutions before?
Yes.
You have, Pat? What's that like? Or does Christmas just not matter that much to you?
Well, it's just a holiday, I guess.
So you don't mind?
Not really.
Have your Christmases at home been fun in the past?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
Well, I don't want to keep everyone waiting. I know we have quite a few people who'd like to ask questions, so let's go back to the telephones. Hi, where are you calling from?
New Brighton.
From New Brighton, okay.
I was wondering, for the residents there, people on your panel, do they feel like they've been pressured by maybe their friends or if they're involved with gangs to get into this style of life, breaking the law? Does it make them, you know, look big in front of their friends?
Is any of you involved in a gang?
Yeah.
You are, Pat?
Yeah.
And is that what has led you to commit crimes?
Not really. Just stealing stuff to get paid to be able to buy things that you want.
So it's to get money for things that you don't have?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, or can't buy.
Because like when you're little, they don't really give you jobs until you're like 16 years old. So I guess when you're little, you take to stealing stuff to get money so you can have things you want. And I guess by the time you're old enough to have a job, you're used to it, so you just keep doing it because maybe you think you can get paid more.
Is it fun? Is it exciting to steal things?
For certain people, like they get high off it.
Not you, like, though?
I guess I do. If I get away with something.
What about you, Pete and Wendy? Do you feel like you've been pressured by your friends to commit crimes? Wendy?
Well, like the first time I probably was, but then after that it's just like natural high. It's a rush, so just do it.
What happened the first time?
Stole a car.
You stole a car. How old were you?
12.
Good heavens. And it was an exciting thing to do?
Yeah.
But it was a friend's idea then?
Yeah.
All just fun and games.
It's all just fun and games, did you say, Pat?
Yeah. Hmm.
Pete, what do you think? Do you feel like you've had friends who've... Was it somebody else's idea the first time you got in trouble with the law?
Yeah, I think my friends influenced me a lot. I'd do what they wanted to do just to be with them.
So what can you do when you get out then? Do you try to make different friends? I mean, that's kind of a tall order, isn't it, to come up with a whole new group of friends?
I don't know. You can still have the same friends, you just have to know that when I get out, I'm not going to do that because I don't want to get put in a place like this again. Because I want to stay out, so I'll still have the same friends, but chances are likely that I won't do some of the things that they are because I want to stay out.
Will that be hard? Do you think they'll say, oh, come on, just this once?
Yeah, it's going to be real hard. I've been in another placement, got out, and unfortunately, I didn't listen to what my plan is now, and I got in trouble again. Now I'm here.
Okay. Let's go back to the telephones for another call. Hello, where are you calling from?
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, I'm calling from Burnsville.
From Burnsville?
Yes.
Okay, and what's your question or comment?
Yeah, I deal with teenagers here in Dakota County quite a bit. And one of the comments that I hear an awful lot from a lot of the kids is, what are you going to do to me? And my feeling is that a lot of the times, a lot of the and I use the word punishments for lack of a better word, seem to be too late in coming. Some of these kids are tied up in the system for so long before anything that I feel meaningful is accomplished to help them get back on the right road. And I just wonder if there's really been a lot of looking into kind of speeding up this process a little bit until it gets so ingrained that a lot of these kids really don't have a way out. They go right back to their old friends, their old hangouts as soon as they're released from one system before they're tied up into another one. And it gets very frustrating sometimes. I'm just wondering what the feelings are of the kids about this and also your people on the panel. I just want to let you know I've been listening to your series all week. It's been very interesting.
Well, thanks for listening. Uh-huh. Freddie Davis, I see you nodding. Do kids have to wait for a long time before they see any consequences in Hennepin County?
Too often they have to wait. Because the court system is so backed up, they may get in for their arraignment hearing. If they're in detention, there may be a speedier process, and even then it's questionable depending on the degree of the crime. But too often, kids who are released, it takes a long time, and by the time they get back to court for final disposition, they've forgotten what they've done. So that is a problem. The other thing is, the caller didn't say that, but one of the things that's come up from kids as well as from other concerned professionals as well as parents, that our court system, by rules, should look for a disposition with the least restrictive alternative. And we're taking a look at that because kids are saying, if I had had something tougher sooner, I might not have made such poor decisions later because I garnered the attitude that, well, I have 5 more chances, so why not? And then they're so far into the system, it's too late to turn back. So that is twofold.
What can you do to speed up the whole process? I don't know if you in the probation and parole area can do much to speed things up, but if there are more kids coming into the system, and there will be as the numbers, just the sheer numbers of kids in the age group that commit crimes are growing, that's what the demographics show, doesn't it look like in the future things are only going to get slower?
Yes.
Yes.
I think
simply.
Because, again, it'll take more money, and more money doesn't necessarily solve the problem. But we do need to look at that issue of the least restrictive alternative for disposition. It really needs to be looked at.
Considering then doing something severe right away in order to sort of shock the system, huh?
Yeah.
And Tom Van Engen, you wanted to add something?
Well, I agree with you that we don't need to be too severe, but that's what I was referring to earlier. I think we need to be a little tougher on crime at the onset. So Freddie has said it a little better than I did, maybe, but try to make sure people know up front. And especially with adults, I see people who've gone into jail the third and fourth and fifth time. It has absolutely no impact on them. I don't know if our panelists here would agree with that, but it just seems like without necessarily putting people in prison or in jail at first, to make sure we can be a little tougher at first to help people understand. Because that's what we really need to do ultimately. We have to get the whole community involved in crime prevention, and we have to get the offenders to understand that what they've done is wrong and understand what they can do to change that. So I agree with Freddie.
Freddie?
And one of the things we should understand, when we say tougher, we don't mean more punishment necessarily. Working with kids, I find that a kid who's been in the system for a long time has gone to an institution, and that kid said the toughest thing for him was to face his victim. That was very tough, but it was also the most helpful thing and the pivotal point in which he started to take a look at, hey, I hurt somebody. So when we say tougher, we don't mean more punishment. We mean taking a look at what's going to have the most impact. And that may mean, as Tom mentioned before, about the whole restorative justice concept of dealing with your victim, that many times, as we talk about the length of time it takes a person to get to final disposition, they've forgotten about the fact that they really hurt someone. Perhaps that should be happening real soon, even before sentencing. Of course, that's some legal things with the fact that they have to be guilty first. But
a little nicety there, huh?
Yeah. But at the same time, I think having to look at the fact they have done something wrong, they were not just dragged out of Sunday school.
Did any of our young panelists, did you meet the victims of your crimes, any of you? Pat?
No.
You didn't?
No.
So you never, what did you do that got you here this time?
I was involved with a thing called treatment, and then I was in a stolen car.
So you stole a car?
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't steal it.
Oh, you stole some things from a car?
No, there was all stolen stuff, and I was involved with trying to sell it.
You were selling stolen goods?
Well, yeah.
Okay, but you never met the people who that stuff belonged to, or?
No.
So, but Pete, you were nodding. You did, huh?
Yeah, most of my victims I met either I was involved with them in the community, or I think a couple showed up at my court hearings.
Did they say anything to you?
Yeah. One lady was in there. I had gotten sent to a placement in South Dakota, and she was in there saying that she thought that I should go to a group home. She didn't think that what I did was so bad that I needed to go out of state.
So she was actually pleading your case for you, huh?
Yeah.
How does that make you feel to see the person that you wronged sticking up for you like that?
I was surprised. I don't know.
Do you think it makes a difference to meet the victim?
Sometimes. Depends.
Sometimes. How about you, Wendy? Did you meet any of the people that were victims of your crimes?
A couple.
And what was that like?
Weird. It was like, I don't know.
Did it make you feel sorrier that you had done what you'd done, or did it just not matter?
For a couple of people, it did. For others, it was just like, there's no feeling.
You're listening to a live Main Street radio broadcast from Sauk Center, and the noise you hear in the background are people filing into the auditorium here at the correctional facility for the annual holiday tea. And it looks like the cookies and the coffee are coming out, and the Christmas trees are shining on the sides of the stage, and candles are lit all over the auditorium. It's a very pretty sight, almost an ironic setting for a discussion on juvenile justice. We have a lot of callers waiting and just a few minutes left, so let's go back to the telephones for another call. Hello, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Grand Rapids.
Okay, and your question?
Well, I have two questions, but before I do that, I would like to wish the young people well with the rest of their lives, and I hope they can get themselves together. First question is for the young panelists, and that is, do they have anger yet, and do they know how to handle that anger, and after they are out of the facility, will they know how to handle that anger and who they can turn to get some help? And then the second question I have is for those that are helping the young people, and that is, do they make inquiry of the young people in the facility whether they have some place to go if or when they are let go from the facility? And is it possible that they don't want to go back to their home? And do they have some place they can go if they don't want to go to the home? I'll hang up and listen to the responses. Thank you.
Okay, so first for our teenage panelists, the caller asked whether you feel angry, and if so, whether there's some place you can go to vent that. And I noticed, Pete, you were nodding.
Yeah, I think a lot of kids that come through here have an anger problem. There's anger built up inside of them. And what the staff here are doing is they help us find ways to vent our anger. They channel it so it doesn't build up inside of us. And because if you bottle it up, it just comes out. And when it does come out, it gets, I don't know.
Gets to be out of hand.
Yeah.
Gets out of hand, Pat?
Yeah.
And do you have some way to, once you're not here anymore and you don't have the staff to help you, will you still have some outlet for that anger?
Well, I guess certain people have, like, their parents to turn to, but I think most of the people that are involved with, you know, crime, I guess, don't have a very good parent setting, so I guess they turn to their friends or just try to keep themselves cool or calm themselves down by talking to themselves.
Wendy, I hate to turn to you as the representative female, but do you think that girls feel the way boys do, angry like that?
I don't know, some of them.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah? And do you feel like you have any good outlets for that?
I don't know, I just, every day, I just take it day by day with my anger. I just I don't think of what's going to be in the future. Just got to work on what's, you know, wrong now.
The second half of the caller's question was, what happens when these kids leave here, and what happens if, for instance, they don't want to go back to their families? I know that our court system places a priority on reuniting families, putting kids back with their parents if possible. Larry Smith, what's done when these kids leave here to check to make sure that the situation they're going into is going to be okay?
Really, every kid who comes through here, we start working at putting them back out in the community as soon as they come in, because it's no simple task. It's important to reconnect them with their community, so we work very closely with their parole agent and with them and with their family. We include families and agents at the initial staffing that we have with kids, and we begin talking about what does each resident need in regards to placement planning. Where possible, we return them back to their family. Oftentimes, if family is not strong enough, we try to return them where they can have effective relationships so that you have somebody who can work with them, who is able to assist them in handling their anger or other emotions. I think one of the key things is how to hook them up effectively with resources in the community so that you can help them turn around and become effective resources.
We have just about a minute left, and I hoped to get this question in, and I don't know if we'll have time for everyone to address it. I'll pick on you first, Freddie Davis. What has to happen to fix what's wrong with the system? A huge question in a short time.
Well, one of the things we have to really take a look at what we have and what we need, and really identify what our goal is in working with youth. One of the things that we have all identified is on the front end, there needs to be a very thorough assessment of each individual that comes into the system.
Okay, I'm sorry, I have to cut you off. I had misread the clock, and I'm afraid that brings us to the end of our special Main Street Radio broadcast. I want to thank our guests, state lawmaker Tom Van Engen, Freddie Davis, and Larry Smith, and also Wendy, Pete, and Pat for joining us. This program was produced by Leif Enger and Sarah Meyer. Our engineers are Rick Hebzinski, Alan Strickland, and Denny Hansen in Sauk Center, and Randy Johnson and Steve Griffith in St. Paul. Special thanks to Bill Klunt and the Minnesota Correctional Facility at Sauk Center. Main Street Radio's coverage of rural issues is supported by the Blandin Foundation, providing leadership training through the Blandin Community Leadership Program. I'm Catherine Winter.